Hello and welcome to Quit Your Crappy Job, Finding Courage for Positive Change. Hello and welcome to Quit Your Crappy Job. I am the co-host, Scott Wilson.
And I'm Jeff Hughes. Welcome to our episode today, Scott. And Scott, good to see you both.
Nice to see you, Jeff.
So today we've got Scott Wood, a former CEO, a former lawyer extraordinaire, who's with us today. So Scott, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here. I'm very excited to do this. Perfect. Talk about all my wonderful experiences that I've had in the past.
Over a very interesting career, already out of the get-go, from lawyer to CEO. So we'll be getting into your story, Scott. As everyone knows, that's the purpose of the podcast. We're going through people's career stories and where they have found, individuals have found the courage to either make significant changes or changes have been forced upon them, how they have the courage, the gumption, whatever, to change direction and go make some type of an improvement. So for us to get started, Scott, why don't you just give us a little bit of background about who you are, and then we can start getting into your story a bit.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for inviting me to be on this. Scott and I used to work together many, many years ago at a little place called Covey Leadership Center. I could program HTML, but that's about it. Scott did all the heavy lifting and the hard work. And from there, I went to law school. I always wanted to be a litigator. I always wanted to be in court. I saw Perry Mason. Very few people who will listen to this will have any idea who that is, but I saw people who appeared in court on TV, and I thought, that looks really cool, and kind of modeled my career so that I could get there. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about it the other day, preparing for this, and I wanted to get a JD MBA. So I took the GRE, I took the LSAT, I did well enough on both to get into both schools, and I applied for a combined JD MBA. And I remember talking to some lawyers, and they said, well, if you come and work for us as a lawyer, we're not going to care that you have an MBA, and we're not going to pay you for it. And then I talked to some business people who said, well, if you come work for us as a business person, we're not going to pay you for that JD. And I thought, well, okay, then why do it? I'll just get the JD and get out of school. So I got the JD, I got out of school, and they tell you in law school, go ahead, Scott.
Did you have a question? No, I was going to ask you, so what JV MBA, what does the JV stand for?
JD. So Juris Doctorate is your doctorate degree if you graduate from law school, and MBA is Master's of Business Administration. Right. And I sort of thought I would do both, but just stayed with the law degree. And in law school, they kind of... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Keep going.
In law school, you get really encouraged to go work for a really big firm, because at the big firms, you can make a lot of money. But in big firms, you can often be thrown, you know, into a library or doing grunt work for years and years. And I didn't want to do that. Like I said, I really wanted to be in front of people and juries. So I took a boutique law firm job. I defended doctors who were sued for malpractice. And I worked there during law school and after law school, and thought, hey, this is for me. This is what I want to do. Because I was in trial 6 months after I passed the bar. Second Wow. chair, but still in trial. But what I found really quickly in the practice of law was, number one, judges set your schedule. If a judge says, we're going to have a hearing on this date, you go have that hearing on that date. If they say the trial is this date, it's going to be that date. If discovery is finished. So all of your choices are sort of mandated by whatever is happening in your client's case. You're also your deadlines, very much a plumber.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Your deadlines, everything. And then, by the way, your client might call you and say, X just happened. Well, you got to jump on that. And it doesn't matter if it's 5 o'clock and you're on your way to a game. It's you're in the client service industry, right?
Yeah. So your time's not yours, right? Because it's just not like you said, client services, but I guess there's a legal binding. If the judge said something's going to happen a certain date, it's happening on that date. Again, regardless if you have a planned anniversary trip or whatever, right?
Nope. Doesn't matter. And sometimes judges, you know, they want to encourage you to settle or to do whatever else. And so they will say, they will set, let's not say unreasonable, because no judge would ever be unreasonable, but they will say, hey, you know, this enormous trial that's coming up, that's going to be 3 weeks that you thought you had a year to prepare for, it's going to be in 3 months because that's when my calendar opens. And so you got to get everything done in that time period.
So it sounds like it's good to be a judge.
I learned
because you have more control over your own schedule. It's good to be a judge. Wow.
You have control over any part of the schedule that you want. Yeah. There's a funny, oh my gosh, what's the name of the band? Anyway, there's this group in Texas that kind of lampoons lawyers, and they sing a song. It's the theme for The Godfather. I can't think of the name of the song, but it starts out, it's called the Federal District Judge song. And it says, imagine me as God. I do. I think about it day and night. It's only right to be a federal district judge and know that I'm appointed forever. But
well, stop, now, Scott, if I could stop you for a minute. So please. we're in, you're starting to do this practice. You're learning the demands. If I could take a step back, because I'm going back to when you and I first met, we met at Covey Leadership Center. You had not gone to law school at this point. I guess you were just about to enter.
Yeah. So I was, I knew I wanted to go to law school. I wanted a doctorate level degree. I was an English major as an undergrad, so it was the fewest credits, the fastest I could get out of school.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
I love to program. I love making websites. I like to do other things. I've always been very interested in tech. So I got a job there working with you.
Hey, so just to go down memory lane, and we'll circle back around, but talking about Covey Leadership Center, and we were in our early 20s, right? Mm-hmm. Although I think I'm a little bit older than you, so probably I was in my mid 20s, already writing software professionally. But I remember, for whatever reason, this popped in my head, Scott. So we're writing the software that is being shipped with the Microsoft Office suite, right?
Yep.
And I remember I decided to have some fun with you. I don't know if you remember this, but I wrote a little program that would take a picture of the screen and would make it look like it was frozen. Not only with the right key combination, could you, get yourself locked out. Now, obviously I programmed what that key combination was. And so you went to the bathroom and I walked up to your computer and I slipped the program in so that the next time, and I put it in the startup. So the next time you rebooted your computer, this thing would come up and make it look like your computer had frozen. Do you remember this?
I do remember it. And I think I restarted my computer about 15 times.
Yeah. And it was so funny. I thought it was going to be like the next morning. So I was all kind of, oh, this will be funny. Tomorrow morning, Scott's going to be like, something went wrong with my computer. Instead, you came back from the bathroom and you restarted. I hadn't realized you downloaded something. You just installed something and restarted it. And you're like, I got a virus or something. And I was like, oh, man, I just remember I was laughing, kind of tickled myself with that one. But
so how far into your practicing law did you realize that that wasn't what you wanted to do? It wasn't Perry Mason enough for you?
That's a great question, Jeff. I hate to admit it. I was only out of law school a year when I moved over from litigation into corporate work. So I was still a lawyer. I still used my law degree, but I became the associate general counsel at Franklin Covey Company. Covey Leadership Center had been acquired by Franklin Quest by this time. And, it was funny. There were a lot of great things about the practice of law. I love the intellectual, aspect of it. I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed arguing, trying to be persuasive. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed really, talking to doctors, figuring out what really happened in cases. What I didn't enjoy was always controversial. I mean, that's by nature, it was litigation, right? So you're always in a fight. Your clients don't really want to see you because every time they see you, they recognize this is the guy who's dealing with this thing that I wish wasn't happening in my life. Like I said, your time isn't your own. You're billing in 6-minute increments. And I found myself, even in that year, being at my son's birthday party and looking at my watch and thinking, I just missed billing for that increment, you know, that 6 minutes. Oh, I just and my whole life turned into 6 minute increments that I would think about. I just didn't make this much money, or I could have. But what really kind of just made me realize I don't think this is for me is when I threw all those things together and thought about what do I want to be in 20 years or 30 years. You can be very successful as a litigator. You can do whatever you want. I just realized this is not going to work for me at this age. I had young kids. I didn't want to not be there for them. I didn't want to have every holiday blown up by different things. So I thought, you know, maybe if I go to the business world, it'll be better. And I called a mentor of mine, and I just said, look, I got to know whether this is right for me. And I'm thinking of blowing this whole JD thing and going back and getting my MBA. And he said, wait, before you do that, don't throw away the last 3 years, 4 years of your life. Call my friend who's the general counsel at Frank & Covey and just get his advice. And because I wasn't looking for a job and because I'd been recommended by a friend of this guy's, I called that guy every day for, I think, almost 4 weeks before I finally got on the phone with him. And I don't know if he was blowing me off or if his, you know, secretary was protecting him from me. And finally he got on the phone. But finally, this gentleman answered the phone. His name was Val Christensen. Val was the general counsel of Frank & Covey Company. He left there and was the CEO himself at a company called Energy Solutions. But I got Val on the phone and I kind of explained what was going on in the law and said, I'm not sure this is the life I want for myself. And we talked on the phone that morning for 3.5 hours.
Wow.
He then said, hey, why don't you come to lunch with me? So I drove out to the Frank & Covey campus. We sat down at lunch and talked for another 2 hours. And at the end of that, he said, you know, I really see a lot of me in you. I understand exactly what you're going through. I had the same frustrations when I was a litigator. He had been a partner at a major law firm. And he said, look, I think you should come work with me. I need the help with technology. You understand technology. You know how to speak it with people. I know what a legal background gives you. You should come work for me. And a week later, he called and offered me a job. And I didn't look back at my litigation career. I still did litigation, but I did it from an in-house perspective where I could yell at the lawyers who were grinding out their time and say, go get this done overnight.
And you had more control over your schedule,
a bit of satisfaction, right? In that?
I've had a lot more satisfaction personally in the business side. And yes, I could yell at the lawyers and have them work at night. I will say I've always worked really hard. I can't remember 40-hour work week. And if I expected a lawyer or a service provider to be working overnight or over the weekend, I did too. And I just always have in my career. I don't ever expect anybody to work harder than me. And as a result of that, I think I've accomplished some pretty fun things. But that was really sort of the impetus for the change was I got what I wanted or what I thought I wanted. And then I found out it wasn't exactly what it was cracked up to be. So maybe I ought to try something else. And I found that working in a business, I guess here's the dichotomy. Here's the difference being an in-house lawyer versus a litigation lawyer. In litigation, the facts are all done. Your clients brought you the case after everything's gone bad, and they're in a court process or they're in a fight, and there's not much you can do to fix it other than go to court, go through the process, either settle it or get it resolved. In business, when you're setting up a business relationship, you're writing a contract, you're thinking about what the future is going to be, or, you know, both parties want some success, you want to find that win-win, to use old Covey lingo, you have a lot more of a chance to put your fingerprints on it and fix it. You write into a contract, here's what's going to happen if we have a disagreement, and then you follow that process and you resolve it. You work with the other company and say, this is what you want and need. This is what we need. Let's go resolve that. And when you can get that kind of thing done, it just felt a lot more fulfilling to me than than always taking a problem when it had sort of already reached, you know, non-resolvable status.
So gotcha. When you moved over to Franklin Covey, you were lead counsel, or then you moved into the CEO role, or tell me again about the progression there.
A whole lot of steps there, actually. I was associate general counsel at Franklin Covey company. While I was at Franklin Covey, like I said, I kind of spoke a little more IT than some of the other lawyers who were there. The company had made a decision to outsource its IT department to, we were going through a process. We hadn't made a decision. It ended up being to EDS, Electronic Data Systems, out of Texas.
Yeah, out of Dallas.
And we, out of Dallas. And we ended up signing a 10-year outsourcing agreement for IT infrastructure and applications with EDS. And yours truly got to be the guy who wrote the contract. So I spent 6 months with the IT guys, with everybody else, and we drafted a contract that at the end was thousands of pages thick with the statements of work. And in addition to that, a year or so into that, the IT guys weren't really thrilled with their jobs that were remaining. The person who was put in charge of the contract had some different views on it than EDS did, and he decided to leave. And the CEO said, well, who knows the most about the contract in the company? Let's put him in charge of managing it. It's Scott Wood. Great. He's now the VP of IT.
Okay.
So I became the VP of IT and engineering at Franklin Covey Company. In addition to that, Franklin was going through a real downturn at the time. So it used to be a publisher of what we called the Brick. It was a calendar that people used, and they would buy that calendar every year. They would write everything into their calendar. And we had retail stores all over the country, over 350 retail stores at the height. But then this funny little thing called Palm Pilot came along. If we ever do a podcast that's about bad decisions by boards, I can tell you about when Franklin Covey decided not to buy Palm Pilot.
Yeah. I worked for Palm Pilot, by the way.
Palm Pilot came along.
Yeah. I was on the other side of that.
So
and we had a discussion. I remember one of the guys during this transition, Scott, he had a Covey planner. And I remember telling him, do you know how many batteries I can buy before I reach the amount for that planner? And I could have everything right here in the palm of my hand. And I remember he just looked at me like, what? But anyways, yeah, keep going. So I was on the other side. I worked for Palm Pilot, basically displacing the type of technology that I was with at Covey. And then you're at Franklin.
Well, the board, actually, I wasn't in the meeting, but a gentleman came out of the meeting and told us, the board looked at this small device and said, nobody's ever going to keep their calendar or contacts on something this size.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I think you're wrong. So we had a number of retail stores. We had to close those retail stores. So I was responsible for sort of closing all the retail stores. It had to do with leasing. It had to do with a lot of other legal stuff, making sure that employees were no longer employed. And so I got put in charge of that project. And then I also was the primary legal representative with HR. So I was always kind of in operations, even in my legal job. I had titles or responsibilities that were heavily in operations. So what happened, on to the topic of this podcast is I'd been there for 5 years. It had been a great job. I had really shown my value to the company, and I got called by a recruiter who said, we can give you a general counsel job. So now you will be the main lawyer for a company, not the assistant or associate. Here's the pay. It's in another state. And I got to make a decision whether I want to do that. I didn't really want to move at the time, but I went to see my boss, and I looked up on salary.com, how much are people like me getting paid? I, I compared what I would have been paid had I stayed in a firm, which was substantially more. And I went to my boss and said, hey, very simply, here's this offer. I'm very seriously considering it. I don't want to move. Will you match it? And then, and if you do, I'll stay. And her response was, we can't match it. And I said, okay, great. Then I'm leaving. And about a week later, you know, a week into my 2 weeks notice, the CFO at the company came to me and he said, I've talked to the CEO. We're willing to match it. We're willing to give you more. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, but I gave you the opportunity to match. You didn't want to match. You didn't want to make me whole. I've already made my decision. I'm moving. So I'm moving on.
Was that tough?
And when we talked,
by the way, Scott,
was that tough? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cause now,
yeah.
I mean, sure cause was. Part of like what we talk about, finding the courage, and now you're stuck in this thing. Like, okay, never mind. Well, I told you we couldn't get it, but turns out we can. And now you're like, mm-hmm. I mean, did you start, was there any, like, I felt bad, like, no. I mean, what made you want to just stand firm on this? I mean, are you, yeah, just tell us. It sounds like that might have been tough. And how did you sort through that?
So there were a few things. In my experience, and yours might have been different, I've never seen employees who said, hey, I'm going to go somewhere, and if you match it, I'll stay, ended up staying for very long. They never seemed very happy. In fact, to the contrary, they often seemed, you know, to go within 6 months.
Within 6 months.
And so yeah. I knew within myself, if I got to this point where I'm really looking for other jobs, I'm probably not happy enough that I'm going to want to stay long term. I felt like I had learned what I needed to learn in this job, and that I was quite confident that I wasn't going to get the general counsel job at Franklin Covey. So if I stayed, it would be another couple of years doing most of what I was doing, but not advancing. And the whole advancing thing meant a lot to me. One big concern was I'm going to move across country. So we moved from Utah to Texas. I took the job at Golfsmith as general counsel. And having a move with a family is a big thing. We had three little kids by that point, and I was nervous, but it was the right thing to do for my career. It was the right thing in terms of what I could do for learning. And when the company sort of said to me, we don't value you like you value you, right then I decided that this isn't right for me. And I guess that's a big thing about moving on or changing jobs. To me, it's always been a question of, I hate the question, what did you make at your last job? What did you make at your last job might be totally irrelevant to what I'm going to be doing at this job. I think the question is more, what value did I provide at the last job? And what is that worth? Because boy, that value could have far exceeded what my salary was. And that might have meant I was a huge bargain there and I learned a lot from them, but here's what I'm going to deliver for you. And when I started to think in those terms about my career, what am I going to learn? What value am I going to drive? And what's it going to do for my future career? The choices kind of became very clear for me.
Yeah, you were very self-aware, because doing what you're saying, that's been my experience as well. People, we match their salaries. And I don't think the people we matched were very self-aware, because they thought that was the answer. And within 6 months, they're like, no, actually, I don't like it here. Or like you said, they've already peaked. There's nothing more they can learn or contribute. It was time for a change. And so giving them the money they asked for or things like that, it just didn't resolve the core issue, right?
Yeah.
And you seem very self-aware.
I've heard a lot of stories of that. Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard a lot of stories of people that, you know, got a salary increase and ultimately they ended up leaving anyway. There's got to be a study somewhere on that research, you know, on how many people actually stay around when they've been offered, you know, a higher salary. Because that's really not the issue. If you made the decision to leave, it's usually for other reasons. Like you said, Scott, you learned all that you could learn, and you were ready for a new challenge, and you moved on. So Kudos to you for standing by your decision. Because I think some people vacillate on that or might tend to say, okay, well, I guess I will stay. And like Scott said, then they end up leaving after 6 months. So anyway, you ended up in Texas. And how did that go?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I can say honestly, every job was the best job for me right then. I think I had a lot to learn. I still had a lot to learn. And I guess I should say, I could probably have still learned something from any of the jobs that I left, but looking at the overall scope of what was going on, of who the other players were, I think whenever I chose to go, it was because the time had really maximized the value of what I had received from the company. Golfsmith was an amazing opportunity. I got to be general counsel all on my own there. And I was the first, well, I guess I was the second general counsel at the company. I took the company public in 2006, but then we went through this little thing called the Great Recession in 2008 and 9. And people wanted to play a lot of golf, but they didn't want to buy a lot of clubs off course. So business sort of, you know, declined a bit. We had some CEO and other management changes. I was there for 5 years and I moved on to my next company. I learned some really amazing lessons at Golfsmith, some things about, you know, how to run a legal department, how to start something, how to get things going. I made a lot of mistakes. I've always made a lot of mistakes. Anybody who claims that they don't make mistakes at their work, I don't really believe. But I've learned a lot from those mistakes. And, you know, we've ended up succeeding regardless. But I guess a couple of things that stand out at Golfsmith just really quickly in my career. There was one time when the gentleman in charge of marketing wanted to have a competition. Well, actually, the then CEO wanted to have a competition, and the competition went like this. If X player wins at the Masters and he plays with this driver and you buy one of these drivers before the Masters, we'll give that driver to you for free. That's a gambling thing. And when gambling is heavily controlled in the United States, and you can't really say, you can't really create contests that are gambling. And so I had to figure out a way to make that work. Well, there is no way to make it work without doing things like a free offer that you can, you know, call this number or send into this address and get a free entrance, even if you didn't buy the club.
Right.
And this, this gentleman who was working on it in marketing said, no, we've got this figured out. I've got this third party company and they're going to do it. They know how to do it. And I said, well, I don't know how that's possible under the law. Let's go for it. So because there was a great deal of pressure from my boss, the CEO, you know, pushed for it. And the weekend before about 72 hours before the whole thing was supposed to go live, the marketing guy brings me this document and he says, hey, they just need us to sign this and we can go live. And I look at the document and it says, we're going to fully indemnify the marketing company for any claim that we have created an illegal gambling scheme, or, you know, we're going to completely cover them because they don't think it's legal, but, you know, we're telling them that we have to do it. So at that point, I get on the phone with the CFO, the CEO. I said, we can't do this. I can make this work. I can give you the rules for a real system. Which we did over the next 24 hours. We still launched. We had everything. We made it all legal. But it was really interesting as I think back on that experience, because I knew that it was impossible and I didn't stand up to management and say, you can't do it this way. And legal departments often get known as the no department. You know, you go there and every idea dies.
Right.
Scott's laughing because he's exactly heard that, you know.
We all have.
Yeah, there's usually a sign over the legal department that says all good deals come here to die. And then everybody's name tag in the legal department says no. What I should have done is said, we can't do it that way, but we can do it this way. And here's the way that we can do it, and just pushed it from the beginning. But that was one of those things that's always stuck to me with just realizing when I know something and the way it has to work, I've got to just stand up for myself at the beginning, because it took a lot of personal capital. It took a lot of, you know, recreating relationships when I let that go so far and knew that it would never work that way. Even despite my colleague, you know, claiming he had everything under control, it eventually the buck stopped at me and I had to accept it. But there were some other fun stories from there as well. But I loved working at Golfsmith. I moved the family across the country. As I said, we went through the recession. We got a new CEO, a new CFO. You know, a lot had changed in the business. And as I looked at what was going to happen with the growth, I thought, you know, I'm not sure I want to be in retail anymore. A headhunter recruited me. They offered me a job with another private equity backed company in senior living, senior housing. It was in Portland, Oregon. And when we had targeted Texas, when we left Utah, the reason I really liked the idea of Texas was you had San Antonio, Austin, Houston, Dallas. There was always going to be a place to find a job. Right. And so I went down there, I passed the bar, you know, we did all the things that we had to do. We were going to live in Texas. And now I got this job in Oregon. And I really struggled, but it was a great job, a great big company, you know, $6 billion in ownership of real estate, 13,000 employees. So wider scope of interest. They thought they were pre-IPO at the time. I would have the ability to really set up a legal department that had never really had a legal department before. And it just sounded really interesting. So I accepted the next job and went on. And I guess sort of what was driving that was, again, I felt like I'd really accomplished what I needed to at Golfsmith. I had the IPO under my belt. I had worked in siding locations and some of the other things in real estate. I'd worked in all the different operations departments, you know, with them in different contracts or whatever else. But what I really decided was, I think now is the time to move on, because I can either be stuck with this size of a company, or I can go try something else that's much, much bigger and see if I can make it work. So I went there and I was at Holiday Retirement for another 5 years. It at the time was the best job I'd ever had, until I got a manager. You know, I don't think I quit a crappy job. I quit a really horrific, amoral manager. Hmm. And he wasn't actually an employee of the company. He was a person from the private equity fund who made life intolerable for management of the company. And that was a really easy choice. It was a matter of, can I find anything? I loved the company. I loved what they did. Taking care of seniors is a wonderful thing. But working for a gentleman who was completely amoral just wasn't worth it for me. So I looked for another job and found one. I had a brief stint at a small private equity company. And then a company in Utah, I told myself I was never moving back to Utah. A company in Utah really needed some help with a patent dispute. They had been sued over a few patents, had lost a case, had spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars defending themselves, had a massive judgment against them, and they had never had a general counsel. And this company was supporting the deaf. They did video interpretive services for the deaf, and they made a caption telephone for the hard of hearing. And my mother had a heart attack in Utah. I thought it'd be nice to be a little bit closer to her, but the company sounded really interesting too. So I met with them, really got intrigued by the job. When I met the people and felt the mission, I just knew I had to come and take the job. So I moved to Sorenson Communications as the general counsel. And almost 3 years later, I was made the CEO when the then CEO left. We had a CEO change within the first year I was there. Then the CFO became the CEO. 2 years later, he decided to leave. And I was the CEO for the last 3.5 years. We've recently sold the company, and now I'm not CEO anymore. But so I guess, Jeff, to answer your question from a while back, mm-hmm. you know, what led to the CEO role at Franklin Covey, at Golf Smith, at Holiday Retirement, at Sorensen. I was always heavily involved in the operations. I had non-legal titles often. I was vice president of X or Y or Z. HR reported to me at one time or another. Payroll reported to me. Finance, I was never a CFO, but I worked with finance heavily. I worked with operations. And I think just getting my hands dirty in all those operating units led the board to trust me that I could run the whole P&L. And that was, it was a great deal of fun. I was completely honored to do it. It was the scariest thing. That was the scariest job change I'd ever taken, to go from general counsel at a company to be the CEO. I thought I knew what it meant. I'd been around a lot of CEOs and I'd spent a lot of time with them. I didn't quite understand the stress and the pressure. But we had three of the best years in the history of the company. During COVID, we had over $900 million of revenue, $350 million of EBITDA. The people worked their tails off to support these communities who needed our help. And it was just an honor to be there. I really enjoyed it.
So what would you say is a common thread or some advice that you could give our listeners that has helped you to be successful across all of these jobs? It sounds like you have been able to choose to leave in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that that you could tell our listeners about that has helped you to leapfrog or move from position to position to position? It sounds like in ever increasing levels of responsibility.
Yeah, I think there's a few things with that. Number one, there is a phrase that I hate, and I said this to people when I was the CEO. If I ever hear anybody say this phrase, that they're on my blacklist, not blacklist, sorry, they're on my negative list. And it's these words, that's not my job. Anybody who says that's not my job clearly is not dedicated to themselves or the company or their career. Because I think what gave me the opportunities that I've had has always been, what can I do? What problem can I pick up? What can I fix? How can I help? And I really think that attitude makes the difference between people who achieve and get higher positions at companies and people who don't. I was always looking for more opportunities to contribute, things to do. I don't like to sit around and not get anything done during the day. I'm one of those people who has to accomplish something. And it doesn't have to be big, but I just want to accomplish something every day. And so if my task list didn't include something that was really going to give me that endorphin rush of checking off a box and saying I accomplished it, I would go look for something else to do. So I think the first one I would say is, everything's your job. Go figure it out. Go figure out how you can help. Always look for more ways to contribute. And if you do that, you're gonna get a whole lot more opportunities in the business and learn a whole lot more than you might have otherwise. I think the second thing, I had a goal list, and there were things I wanted to accomplish in my career. Once I decided I'm going to be in business, I said, well, if I'm going to work in a legal department, I want to run a legal department. And the way to run a legal department is to learn, as an associate general counsel and get this experience and then go to a general counsel job or a chief legal officer job. And I set goals, and as I would look towards those goals and what I was accomplishing on a year-to-year basis and say to myself, have I achieved this, or are there more things I need to do? I had things on my list, like do an initial public offering, do a refinancing of debt, buy and sell property. I had a lot of different things that were sort of sub goals, but when I would accomplish them, I'd say, okay, it's probably time to move on. So I think those are sort of the big ones that have helped me in the career. Another one would be try and be honest with myself about what I could accomplish and what I can't. I think we all think we can do everything. And my mom told me I could do everything most of my life. There are people who are better, smarter, and faster than me in a lot of different areas, and learning how to manage them and work with them to accomplish a better result has always been important. So a lot of my success has been based on working with really amazing people who are really good in their individual roles, and just trying to figure out how we could work together to accomplish something better than I could alone, I guess. And then a couple of other things, you know, as far as choosing or being able to choose when to go, I always listen to a recruiter. It's been a favorite saying of mine. I can't remember who told me once, but they said, it's always nice to be invited to the party, even if you choose not to go. So if people want to call me and talk to me about a job, I'm happy to talk about a job, which has made me able to make some of these choices when I needed to. It also keeps my interview skills up. It keeps me interested in what I'm doing. I will say I haven't talked to a recruiter in a few years, and now I'm wondering if I can still do it. But, I think always looking, always keeping your eyes open is not a bad thing, because it's been my experience that companies aren't interested in my personal best interest. They're interested in theirs. So the only person who's going to take care of me is me. And I've always got to be looking for those opportunities. I've also chosen never to leave until I had another job. And I think in most of the time that has treated me really well. There's a couple of times I probably should have left earlier, because it would have been better for my mental health. But I think those are the big ones. I guess one other one, and this one's really simple, but something I'd love to share with everyone. In business, we have a tendency to want to accomplish a lot. And having task lists, having things as simple as a notepad, have really helped me prioritize what I want to get done and know when I've accomplished it or when I've done everything that I can. I've been amazed how many people would come and talk to me as the CEO or as the general counsel and say, hey, what do you want me to do? And I would tell them, and they would come back a few minutes later and say, I don't remember what you said. Can you tell me again? I just would give everybody advice. If you really want your career to be on track, take notes. There's nothing wrong with taking notes. Go to your manager and
on your Palm Pilot.
On your Palm Pilot, on your iPhone, on a piece of paper, you Luddites. Whatever you need to do, and then clarify with your manager or whoever you're talking to, I think this is what you told me you want. Is this what you really wanted? And when they say yes, you deliver what you said on that document. And that makes a massive difference in allowing other people to trust you and trusting yourself as you accomplish things. And coincidentally, as a lawyer, I'll say, and you have a record of what you were told and what you talked about, and you can share that with people later, which is a good thing to have.
You know, Scott, one of the things
that's outstanding.
One of the things that stands out
to me,
Scott, from everything you just said, you know, your lessons you learned, is I go back to basically when we had first met, had a little context to that, was that, you know, the internet was new when you and I met. And the fact that you knew HTML shows that you had taken some initiative, to your point, of learning some new things out. It wasn't that work was demanding you to learn HTML. You learned it on your own, right? And then you come to a place. I remember being in a meeting with the folks at Covey Leadership Center, and they were asking us what the internet was, what the web page was. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's like a mail catalog. Well, yeah, yes, but no. Oh, so it could do, you know, they just didn't get it. And the fact that you had a skill in that little technology switch, right, when there was businesses were trying to figure it out, gave you an edge and people leaned on you. So you had your legal background, but you also happened to know enough of this new thing. And so when you were talking about trying to take initiative for yourself and learn new things, I think about that for people, right, that it doesn't just have to be asking at work, perhaps, new things, but go take some initiative outside of work to learn something new, because you don't know when that could help you out. Would you agree?
Oh, completely. I've worked with several people. You know, one thing that's really amazing that people can do outside of work that will help give them benefits at work in ways that they would never believe is Toastmasters. Have you ever heard of Toastmasters?
Yes. Yep.
Toastmasters, it's how to speak in public. And I have had a lot of people who I've worked with who on the side, you know, wanted to learn how to speak in public so that they could be a better presenter, so that they could speak to the board or management or do different things. People who have learned languages, people who have, as you said, Scott, gone and found a new skill and then come back to the office and said, hey, I learned how to do this. Can I contribute in this way? Anytime that you can, that anyone can do anything and say, I have a new way to contribute and I'm willing to do it. Boy, that just makes everybody who's around them better, right? Because we got a skill, let's do everything that we can to enhance it, magnify it, and we'll get the benefit as a company. You'll get the benefit as an employee. It's those employees who say, I don't want to work more. I don't have the time for that. That's not my job. Those are the people who just aren't really going to progress.
Yeah, for sure. So the other thing I think about, Scott, with everything you said, is that you've made these changes. You said you normally had, you took another job before you went there. Just one last thing, because I think we have a good wrap up here, but on the personal side, how was this making these changes, negotiating it with the family? I mean, these were big changes that they were absorbing. Was there any advice you can, insight you give there? Would that make it harder, easier? You know, were they excited? Oh yeah, we get to move somewhere else. Or, I mean, how is that along the journey you just explained and the advice that you've given?
Well, I've thank you for bringing that up, because I've got to say, I would never have accomplished half of what I have without a wife who was very caring and understanding and willing to take the risk with me. There are a lot of people in spousal or significant other relationships who are tied to a place, tied to being near family, tied to different things. My wife and I, when we decided to get married, we talked about all of that and said, here's the kind of life that we want to live. Here's what we want to accomplish. And that means both of us are going to have to make some sacrifices. We're going to have check-in points where we're going to talk about whether we're willing to make that sacrifice. She hadn't moved as much as I had. As a kid, I kind of grew up all over the world. I lived in many different countries. I spent time in South Africa, New Zealand, Hong Kong. So I've always been a bit of a gypsy. For my wife, that was a big challenge. But she realized, you know, we would talk about it. Here's the next opportunity. Here's what we have on our goal set. Here's what we want to do. She agreed with me that this was what we wanted to go for. So that's always been incredibly helpful. Moving the kids was hard, especially the last one. When we moved to Utah, we moved when my son was a junior in high school. Mm. And he was just starting his senior year. So we took him away.
Ouch.
And I've had a lot of people say, I could never do that to my kid. And, you know, I moved a lot when I was a kid. So I go, wow, I loved every new opportunity. I got to reinvent myself and say, this is what I'm going to be here. And my son did really well through the change. He was mad, you know, and a couple of my kids were angry or frustrated, or they wanted to be with their friends. But we would often talk as a family. I wouldn't say it was easy in any way. When we did move, we would say to the kids, here's what we're thinking about. Here's why. Here's the economic reasons. Here's the job reasons. And now you can participate in that move by helping us pick a house or helping us choose a school district where we want to look. So we would try and empower them with something that they could pay attention to and like.
That's a cool idea.
But I'm not going to downplay that one. That's always been probably the most difficult part. For me, you know, after 5 years, I kind of get that itch and go, I really love what I'm doing, but it's probably time to change. I'm afraid I've instilled that in my children at this point. I guess the only advice that I can give is talk to that significant other, talk to whoever you can, and talk about all the pros and the cons. And then the other thing that I will add is it's just so much easier now with the internet, with FaceTime, with being able to talk on your cell phone to people across country. You don't have to be out of contact with your family, even if you're around the country or in a different time zone. And the world feels smaller because of that. And it's easy to get home and spend time with the people that you love. But I would say, look, if you have dreams of accomplishing big things, what is the old Bible verse? No man's a prophet in their own country, I think. You got to go where the opportunity is. You've got to, I found in my career, I had to take an opportunity, to take a risk, to take a change, and to go do it. And when I did that, it usually ended up to my benefit. And I would leapfrog people who stayed in businesses and didn't move on, because sometimes it's harder for management to see the worth of somebody who's been there a long time than somebody who's come in. And that's a sad reflection on management, but it is the truth. I will say, Scott, in one job, I moved, and shortly after, literally within a month and a half of moving, I had an event that I quit. I quit my new job. I ended up staying for 5 years, but I quit within a month and a half. I worked with a manager who didn't really understand what I did. We had a contract that was for website tracking, you know, where they put a little pixel on your web page and they can tell where you went through the page. So the company had signed this contract years before. The volume going through this contract was now 10 or 20x of what they had planned at the beginning. So the costs were significantly higher. And the contract had one of those. It automatically renews, and you can stop it from automatically renewing if you give us notice on the winter solstice of, you know, the third month of the year of the goat between, you know, this day and this day. And the company had missed it, and it had automatically renewed. And the service provider said to the company, you got to pay us. It's $120,000 a year, and we're going to keep going. And they said, the IT team came to me and said, can you help us solve this? So I called the lawyer for the other company and I said, look, this doesn't cost you a penny more to have this contract. It's a problem. Anyway, I negotiated a settlement for the whole thing for about $20,000. We walked away from the contract. And then I met with my boss the next day and told the person what had happened. And I'm trying to keep this gender neutral. They said, well, that sounds unethical to me. I said, excuse me? Wow. And they said, well, if we were really using it and the contract had doubled, you know, had renewed, you told them that we would sue them or they'd have to sue us to get the money. That doesn't sound like an ethical thing to do. It sounds like you're unethical. And I said, well, I got a signed release from their general counsel. They agreed that this is a good, you know, conclusion to the contract. And they said, no, I think that's unethical. And I said, well, then fine. Then I quit. What do you mean you quit? You just got here. And I said, well, if you think I'm unethical, we're done. You can't have an unethical lawyer. If you can't trust me, we're finished. And so I went home that night and I was a mess. I, you know, sweat down my armpits all the way to my hips. I had just moved my family across the country. I didn't know what to do. I was terrified. I told my wife, this is what happened today. And she's like, are you serious? You quit your job? Why would you do that? The next morning, that person's boss called us into the office and we all met together. And I sort of explained my position. And he said, that doesn't sound unethical. That sounds like exactly what we hired him to do. You know, why are we dealing with this? But one thing, I guess, that I'm thinking about, Scott, is... One thing that's treated me well is I have had a certain sense of what do I want to do? What do I want to accomplish? And what am I not willing to tolerate in my career? And sometimes just being willing to admit I'm not going to tolerate that damn the consequences, has served me well. Now, there's a couple of times where I probably tolerated things longer than I should have because I thought I could. But generally, I've said, you know, this is what I'm willing to deal with. This is how I'm willing for other people to treat me and for me to treat them. And if it's not going to be that way, I'm willing to move on. And that's always treated me really well in my career. And I would recommend that people just think of their value that way and how they want to be treated as an individual. I think there's a lot of articles out there that say people don't leave companies, they leave managers. And I think that's probably been pretty true in my career. But anyway, so
that's a good story.
Be true to yourself, be true to your family, and don't ever let anybody call you unethical. that's a non-starter for me.
No, that's a good lesson, Scott, because, you know, one of the things about this job, this podcast, right, is just people who they get stuck and they, I don't know, they lack the courage to do what you did. That was a very ballsy move to sit there. And you just started this job, moved your company, your family, and you're now I'm willing to walk away. And but you know, there's some benefits.
The person who I had that first conversation with, and I have now become good friends, and you know, we've sort of resolved all of that. So,
yeah, and it also helps people understand.
Well, great stories
and what they get, right?
Yep. But. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed hearing about your journey. We appreciate you taking an hour with us to tell you about your many jobs and responsibilities. I especially love the part about you know, the pointers that you've given our listeners about how to excel in each of these jobs. And so hopefully people will be able to use that information to improve their careers. So we appreciate you joining us on the call today.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. And I'll just say to your listeners, you know, trust yourself, learn something new, do something better, and give it your all. When you do, it's amazing what rewards you can reap from that.
Yep.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate your time
today.
Awesome.
Thank you, Scott. Good advice. Really appreciate it. And so for everyone, again, just go to quityourcrappyjob.com. Of course, you can find the podcast where you normally listen to podcasts. You can subscribe to our newsletter to get updates when we do provide more content. And with that, I guess we'll go ahead and call this episode finished. Thank you all so much.
Thanks again. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining us today. Listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Quit Crappy Job. Find us on YouTube at Quit Your Crappy Job. Contact us at quityourcrappyjob@gmail.com. Music is provided by Kelton Levitt. He can be reached at kelton.levitt@gmail.com.